that if I could just live my life over, the one thing that I would do differently is early on study to a terminal degree in biblical languages and translate the New Testament myself. Because I'm disturbed that we don't have a translation of the New Testament that renders agape by transliterating it to the word that really means something more than love. Because you'll find that every passage of the New Testament that speaks of love as being something paramount, something that is the essence of what Christianity is supposed to produce, that word is agape. And when we translate that word love, it brings a myriad of meanings to people. I was fortunate enough tonight to eat with Brother Swaim, and he fed me black raspberry pie. He had the audacity to ask me if I would rather have a black raspberry or a peach. Now, what idiot would say, well, I shouldn't say that, because there sits Charlie, and Charlie had peach pie. That's not a slam, Charlie. I just caught myself in the nick of time there, and I don't want to insult you now. Charlie and I go back a ways because he put a roof on my house over there in Spring Valley Drive, and I had a lot of fun with Charlie, and he had some fun with me. He had the job almost done, and I suppose there was only a day or two, Charlie, when you pulled this stunt on me. But he told me, he said, well, he said, I'm going to leave now. I'll be back in about a month or two. And I said, well, Charlie, that's okay, because I'm not going to pay you for about 3 months. So I hope he realized he met his match and quit joshing me, okay? But I have been talking to the folks here about the fact that...
Turn your mic on.
Thank you, Scott. One of the problems of being in December of your life is you're a little bit on the forgetful side. A little bit? I'm kidding you. But at any rate, I've been suggesting to people that there's a lot of things we miss because of the way that translators use that word to encompass everything from brotherly love to agape. Agape is a special kind of love. And it's a love that compels you to act for the benefit of those who need help. It's something you can't do anything about. It's compulsive. And then last night I suggested something that I would suppose would be new to most of you. I suggested to people that there's not a very good definition of grace that is commonly used. You always hear grace identified as God reaching down to the helpless in some way. I don't think that's a very good definition of grace. Grace, and here it is, I'm going to suggest to you my understanding of what it means, not based on what scholars say it means, but by looking at how it's used in the Bible. Grace is the action of agape love. Well, why would I say that? I would say that because of the golden text of the Bible. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. So it is an adverb of reason or cause. And that tells me that God was compelled by the love that he had to offer his Son. And that's, since God and Christ are identical in their nature, Christ was compelled by that same agape love to accept that challenge, come to this sin-cursed earth for 33 and a half years, and then be nailed to a cross. Why? Because he loved us. And because he knew that his sacrifice would allow people who struggle against sin and sometimes lose the struggle, would overcome that deadly disease we call sin and live with him eternally in heaven, in fellowship with him, just the way the first human pair were prior to the fall. So this evening we're going to be talking about that high calling of Christ, and we have labeled our discussion Growing in Grace. Paul set forth what should be an attainable goal
In our lesson text, Ephesians 3, verses 14 through 19. For this cause I bow my knees to the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, of whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named, that he would grant you, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened by his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that ye, being rooted and grounded in agape, may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the height and length and depth, or the breadth and length and depth and height, and know the love of Christ. Again, it's agape, which passeth knowledge, that you might be filled with the fullness of God. And since God is agape, that's his nature, he wants you and me to be like that. And I suggested last night, what a tremendous thing that would be if we could convince the members of God's people, the members of his kingdom, to set that as a goal, to be the kind of people that Jesus talked about it when he said, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples. If you have agape one for another, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples. If you have agape one for another. He didn't say love, because love might be what we say about hunting, as I said last night. I love to hunt. But I don't love them because I want to promote the welfare of that deer. I want to kill that thing, okay? So I can put them on the table, all right? Vastly different idea altogether. So we're going to explore that tonight. Excuse me. Listen to what Paul told the Colossians about the revelation of God's plan to the saints among the Gentiles. Colossians 2, verse 27. Christ in you, the hope of glory. The object of Christianity is to create Christ in the hearts of the disciples so that we think like Christ thought. Because when we think like Christ thought, we will act like Christ acted. We will learn to love what he loved and hate what he hated. The Galatians who had been told by the Judaizing teachers that Christ's atoning blood was not enough to save them, but they had to in fact be circumcised and become a Jew and keep the law. He said, my little children, of whom I travail again in birth until Christ be formed in you. So you can clearly see that's the goal. And in 1 John 4, verse 8, he that loveth not, that is, he that hath not agape love, does not know God, for God is agape. And I am convinced that God desires more of us than brotherly love. And I, unfortunately, didn't come to this understanding early on. And as I get to the December of my life, I realize that I have preached to people all my life while we're running the church in second gear. And I want to shift into high, and if you got overdrive, hit it. Because there's so much more out there for us to accomplish if we show people what God intended us to be showing them when he asked us to reproduce Christ in our own lives and hearts. People of agape love, who don't think about themselves, but they see every person as a person in need. And just like Jesus, one of their questions will be, what can I do for you? Having the servant mentality. What Jesus asked of Peter in John 21, verses 15 to 17, is vital, and each of us need to ask ourselves the same question. You remember what he said? Well, our Bibles will say, Peter said, Lord, do you know I love you? Or do you, I beg your pardon, Peter, do you love me? That's not what he said. He said, Peter, do you have agape love for me? Peter answered, I have phileo love for you. Do you not have agape love for me? And each time he'd say, feed my sheep. Peter, do you have agape love for me? Lord, I have phileo love for you. And the third time he said, after saying, feed my sheep again, he said, Peter, do you have phileo love for me? He said, Lord, you know I have phileo love for you. And I suggested now several nights, when Peter said that, he knew he was standing before someone he had seen read the hearts of men. He had seen them lower that fellow in Mark 2 through the thatched roof. And he stood there while Jesus read the hearts of those Jews sitting there and said, "Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether see you to say, thy sins be forgiven thee, arise, take up thy bed and walk, judge ye. But that you may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sin, he saith unto the sick of the palsy, rise up and take thy bed and go to thy house." Okay? And when he said, "You know," Peter said to Christ, "You know I have phileo love for you." It was because at that time Peter didn't have phileo love. I beg your pardon, he didn't have agape love. He had phileo love. And he knew there was no use lying to Jesus because Jesus knew his heart. But I'll show you later tonight and probably repeat it again before the week's out. When Peter got done with his mission in the kingdom of Christ, he reached that pinnacle that Jesus knew he'd reach. And we'll see that after a while. But he said in Colossians 3:14, "Put on agape, which is the bond of perfectness." Now, we're all the time telling people that means complete, and it does. But I rather tell people this. It's just like when my wife used to do hand illustrations for me when I used the projector. I couldn't draw anything but my breath. And so I'd tell her what I wanted illustrated, and she would do a great job of it. And I'd tell her to make a change here, make a change there. And finally, I would say, "That's perfect." And that's exactly what I believe the right idea here is, that when we find people who have grown to the point that they love with agape love, God in effect says, "That's perfect. That's exactly what I was after." That is the love of Christ achieving its purpose, being replicated in the hearts of believers. John used agape in 1 John 4:12. "If we love one another, if we have agape one for another, God dwelleth in us, and agape is perfected in us." It means agape has achieved its purpose. Now, I've got something here that I hope works. I'm not sure about this now. No, I backed it up. Can I back that up? Can we back that up? Can you help me? Come on. See if you can back it up. I have a video here that I've downloaded. Back it up.
Forward or back? Forward or back?
Backwards. Back it up, back it up. Another one. Now, but I don't see the place where I start the video. There we go. Now we got her. Thank you. All right. Now, sorry to have this slight interruption here, but I think if you pay attention, you'll appreciate this video.
Jesus, you probably know about one of his famous teachings called the Golden Rule. Do to others what you would want them to do to you. And this, actually, is a restatement of something else that Jesus said, that the meaning of life is to love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Now, that's really beautiful, but what does he mean exactly by the word love? It's an unclear word in English, because you can love your mom and you can love pizza. And if the word love means the same thing in both of those cases, your mom's gonna feel real bad. So what did Jesus mean in his language? Well, first of all, this love your neighbor phrase is a quotation from the Hebrew scriptures, where the word for love is ahava. However, the language Jesus spoke and taught in from day to day, it was a cousin language of Hebrew, that is Aramaic, in which the word for love is rachma. But then, as Jesus' followers spread his teachings around the world, they translated them into Greek, using the word agape. But here's what's fascinating. The earliest followers of Jesus, who wrote the books of the New Testament in Greek, they didn't learn the meaning of agape by looking it up in ancient dictionaries. Rather, they looked to the teachings of Jesus and the story of his life to redefine their very concept of love. So, one time, Jesus was asked about the most important command in the Jewish scriptures. And he first quoted from the ancient prayer in the Torah called the Shema. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart. So, love for God is the most important thing. But then Jesus quickly followed up by saying another command from the Torah was also the most important, to love your neighbor as yourself. So, which is the most important, loving God or loving your neighbor? Jesus' answer is yes. To ask the question means you don't get his point. For Jesus, they are two sides of the same coin. Your love for God will be expressed by your love for people, and vice versa, they're inseparable. And so this makes it clear that for Jesus, agape love is not primarily a feeling for someone else that happens to you, like our phrase, I fell in love. For Jesus, love is action. It's a choice that you make to seek the well-being of people other than yourself. Jesus also went on to teach that genuine love for God and others means seeking people's well-being without expecting anything in return, especially from people who are in difficult situations who can't repay you even if they wanted to. According to Jesus, this kind of generous love reflects the very heartbeat of God. And he took this even further. Jesus said that the ultimate standard of authentic love is how well you treat the person that you can't stand. Or in his words, you shall love your enemy and do good to them, expecting nothing in return. For Jesus, this kind of enemy-embracing love imitates the very character of God himself. Now, we wouldn't be talking about Jesus still today if he had only said things like love your enemy. This is how he actually lived. Jesus was constantly helping and serving the people around him in very practical and tangible ways. And he consistently moved towards poor and hurting people who couldn't benefit him in return. He showed love for the forgotten ones, the people who usually fall through the cracks. And when Jesus eventually marched into Jerusalem, he made himself an enemy of the leaders of his people by accusing them of hypocrisy and corruption. But then instead of attacking his enemies to overthrow them, he allowed them to kill him. Jesus died for the selfishness and corruption of his enemies because he loved them. After Easter morning, Jesus and then his followers claimed that it was the power of God's love for the world that was revealed in Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. As the Apostle Paul put it, God demonstrated his own agape for us in this: while we were still sinners, the Messiah died for us. Or in the words of the Apostle John, God's own agape was revealed when he sent his one and only Son into the world so that through him we could have life. And for John, then, this leads naturally to the conclusion, beloved ones, if that's how God has loved us, then we ought to show love for one another. So Christian faith involves trusting that at the center of the universe is a being overflowing with love for his world. Which means that the purpose of human existence is to receive this love that has come to us in Jesus and then to give it back out to others, creating an ecosystem of others-focused, self-giving love. And that's the New Testament meaning of agape love.
I hope you were able to hear that, and I hope it gave you some insight into what I'm trying to emphasize this week. And our lesson text for the rest of the lesson is Ephesians chapter 3, 14 and 19, as we suggested earlier. Just let me bring back that slide back up. He said, for this cause I bow my knees unto the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. And it closes with the idea that you may be filled with the fullness of God. Paul's prayer for Ephesus and for us is for spiritual growth. And agape is the goal. What would a congregation look like if every member reached it? Remember the segment of the gospel segment of the video where Jesus washed feet? That account begins in John 13, and I'd encourage you, if you would, open your Bibles. I want to show you some things from that. And as we're turning there, I want to tell you also, I love this group of folks who follow Christ here in Berkeley Springs. There's nobody quite like them on the face of God's earth. But I realize it's December, and I may never have an opportunity to speak to them again in this side of eternity. And so there are times when I digress and show them something that I wish I could have passed along when I was here. It's things I've learned. And so I want you to look at this, John chapter 13. And we'll start reading. You know the account of him washing the feet of the disciples. But starting with verse 6, he says, "Now cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter saith unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him, therefore said he, Ye are not all clean. And of course you and I know that has an allusion to Judas. But I'm going to suggest to you there's more to that passage than that. Because if you turn back to chapter 11 in your Bibles, starting with verse 55, the Jews' Passover was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. Then sought they for Jesus, and spake among themselves as they stood on the table, What think ye that he will not come to the feast? Now, what I want you to see, they were up there to purify themselves because they had to be ceremonially clean in order to take the Passover. But something else enters into that. Read Leviticus 22. Turn there with me, 22 to 46. Leviticus chapter 22, 4 to 6. When man soever the seed of Aaron is a leper or hath a burning issue, he shall not eat of the holy things until he be clean. And whoso toucheth anything that is unclean by the dead or a man whose seed goeth from him, or whosoever toucheth any creeping thing, whether he may be made unclean or a man of whom he may take uncleanness, whatsoever uncleanness he hath, the soul which hath touched any such thing shall be unclean until even." Let's leave it there. He washed their feet in part because had they touched any unclean thing with their sandaled feet as they went up there to observe the Passover after having already been cleansed in chapter 11, they would have been unclean. And this is a double entendre where he couldn't have had fellowship with Christ in the initiation of the Lord's Supper or the Passover. It also refers to Judas and his betrayal. And so I think that's worth passing along for whatever it's worth. It's like if you watch the OJ trials, as those of us who are older did, everyone's like, I have a sidebar. That was a sidebar, folks. Now, let me say again, though, I am 100% convinced that if God would have been satisfied with phileo love, that's what he would have said. But you cannot escape the fact that every time this love that is required of a disciple is mentioned, it is agape love. And need I tell you that 1 Corinthians 13, everything in that great love chapter is talking about agape. And though I give my goods to feed the poor, all my goods to feed the poor, and have not agape, it is nothing. And you know the passage well enough, read it yourself, and you see how vital it is. Well, what would a congregation like that look like? Well, a picture of him washing the feet of the disciples is a picture of agape love in action. Agape should be thought of as an active verb. You can't think of agape being inactive. It's like trying to think of faith without works. It's dead. Agape should be thought of as an active verb. And I'll remind you men that in Ephesians 5, verse 25, from the pen of Paul, we have the command, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church. Do we have to say that that was agape love? We ought to know that. And remember, when you love your wife, that is supposed to be an active verb in action. It's not just saying, honey, you look nice. It's acting in a way that shows that, in fact, that's the way you regard her. Last night I told you that grace was the action of agape love, and since that's a defining characteristic of God and of those who would be his full-blown disciples, when you talk of God's love and grace and you talk of the love and grace we ought to exhibit, they cannot increase in God's case, but they can increase in our case. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about. Because you and I can grow in agape love. God's already there, okay? And for that reason, I've told you time after time, Eileen and I often in our private prayers will say, God, help us become people of agape so that we love one another the way Christ loved. And we're not there yet. Would you believe it? Sometimes I'll get cross. And she's farther ahead than I am because she doesn't slap me. But I'm serious about this, folks. We need to be serious about trying to develop this in our lives. And we can grow and we should grow. When Jesus asked Peter if his love had reached the agape level, it hadn't. But Thursday evening, I hope to show you that he got there. And we can as well. Agape love shows up in the way we use our tongue. A very familiar passage, Ephesians 4, verse 29. Let no corrupt communication proceed from your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying. Build people up spiritually, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. We've got a lot of preachers in the audience. I wonder how many of them had people say something questionable to them and then say, I only tell you this because I love you. Well, I've had a few people told me that, and I'm almost tempted to say, quit loving me. I can't stand it. But the kind of love that you and I are supposed to radiate is love that edifies, builds up, ministers grace to the hearers. What? You mean to say, I'm supposed to be a minister of grace? You bet. So are you. Because your agape love will produce grace, just the same as God's agape produces it toward us. Chapter 4 of Ephesians, verse 32. And be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Do you know God tells us that for more than one reason? Of course, he wants to be people of agape, certainly. But he also wants us to be happy. And when you have a grudge-bearing spirit, when you can't forgive people, what happens to you whenever you go home and go to bed at night? You lay there unable to sleep because you're groveling in your mind about, oh, that was such a rotten stunt that so-and-so pulled. And if you deal with it properly, realizing you have a divine command to love that person with agape love, you'll deal with it, and then you're going to lay down and sleep, and you're going to rest. Be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. Trouble with kindness or forgiving another? Well, I'll tell you what I do when I have a tough steak. I'll put some tenderizer on it before I cook it. Well, I'm going to recommend to you agape love. It's a tremendous heart tenderizer. And if you ever have any trouble with your own spirit, just work on it. Agape will help tenderize that heart. You contrast the corrupt speech that disheartens with speech that edifies. Bitterness, wrath, clamor, evil speaking against kind and tender and forgiveness. Not only forgiving, but giving is a measure of agape love. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1, Paul, of course, told the church to take up a collection of the poor saints of Jerusalem. You hear it oftentimes in churches of Christ prior to the offering on the Lord's Day. And then when he penned 2 Corinthians, he was trying to get them to fulfill the earlier commitment. And so he sent Titus to Corinth along with someone, probably Luke. And he referred to giving as a grace in 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 7. Let me just turn and read that in its context to you. 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 7. Excuse me. I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others, and to prove the sincerity of your agape. Now, you know I'm reading the King James and it says love, but I just threw agape in there because that's what the original says. And I don't think the word love does it justice. It says, it proves the sincerity of your agape, because that demonstrates that indeed you do love the way Christ loves. The Apostle John used similar language. I have to read that one. 1 John chapter 4 and verse 12. If we love one another with agape love, God dwelleth in us, and agape is perfected in us. And so that's another place where it shows we can grow in grace. In Luke 6, verse 38, Jesus said, given it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom, for with the same measure that you meet, withal it shall be measured to you again. Giving is action of agape love, and it will prompt a response in kind. Love's like a smile. It's hard to give it away when somebody doesn't give it back to you. Matthew 5:42, Jesus taught, give him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Luke 6:34, if you lend to them to whom you hope to receive, what thanks have you? For sinners also lend to sinners, hoping to receive as much again. And giving prompted by agape is done because of the nature of the giver and demands no reciprocation. Agape love compels us to help if we can help. Have you ever heard of anyone who complained? You haven't lived very long if you haven't. Complained of the fact they've done something wonderful to someone and thought they were slighted because the people didn't seem to appreciate it. And they'll say, after all I've done for them, look at what they did. Look what they didn't do, or whatever. You've heard that kind of thinking. What's it betray? It betrays the fact that whoever did the first deed did it thinking he's going to get something back. We need to be people who act because of who we are, not what we expect other people to do if we treat them right. We ought to treat them right because of who we are. And don't misunderstand, folks, if you're visiting with us, these folks are famous for that. I'm just trying to get everyone to kick it up a notch and never be satisfied with phileo love if we're capable of agape. Would people give for the wrong reason? I suggested earlier lesson, yep, ask Ananias and Sapphira. Peter has a recipe for growing in grace. 2 Peter 1, verse 2. Grace and peace be multiplied unto you through the knowledge of God and Jesus our Lord. That's how it happens, by getting to know more about Jesus and God. The sense of grace and peace being multiplied means developing greater and greater understanding of God's love until it's replicated in you. 2 Peter 1, 3, according to his divine power has given us all things pertaining to life and godliness through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue. Verse 4 of 2 Peter 1, whereby are given unto us a exceeding great and precious promises, that by these ye might be partakers of the divine nature. That's what I'm talking about. For in Jesus Christ neither circumcision availeth anything, nor uncircumcision, but faith that worketh by agape. That's Galatians 5 and verse 6. 1 John 4, verse 8, God is agape, his divine nature, and we can be partakers. Mile markers on Peter's road to spiritual maturity. Let's look at it. 2 Peter 1, 5 to 7. Add to your faith virtue, high moral standards. Add to virtue knowledge, right back to verse 3. Verse 6, to knowledge add temperance. That's self-control and restraint. To temperance add patience, patient endurance. To patience add godliness, piety and reverence. Verse 7, to godliness add brotherly kindness. That's phileo, love. Don't stall your engine on phileo. To brotherly kindness add agape. Peter himself had traveled this road. I talked to you about John 21. But I want you to notice, Peter wrote that passage. And after Peter refused to tell Jesus he loved him with agape love, when he knew Jesus was reading his heart and he wasn't going to lie to him, I'll guarantee you he did not write in this passage, add to phileo love agape, knowing he didn't have it himself. I'm saying the very fact that he wrote it tells you Peter reached that goal. And if he reached it, you and I can, if we work at it. Look at the importance of our spiritual growth. If these things be in you and abound, they make you that you're not barren or unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. You talk about fruit bearing. If we could arm a congregation with soldiers of Christ that were filled with agape love, I told my son, you couldn't build church buildings fast enough. Jesus said so. By this shall all men know you're my disciples. If you have that kind of love. But we fooled around just saying love, and too many times it rolls off your back like water off a duck. But this stuff I'm talking to you about is not a suggestion, it's a commandment of God. And don't let what I believe an insufficient translation of the passage keep you from attaining it. Failing to grow in grace hurts the cause of Christ, and it hurts us. He that lacketh these things is blind and cannot see afar off, and hath forgotten he was purged from his old sins. And we reach where the agape love of Christ is duplicated in each of us, we will have happier lives and we will build bigger churches. Rewards for the agape driven life, it won't give you miraculous power, but it will give you honesty and a work ethic that employers are begging for. They're looking for people who won't steal. I have a friend who has four or five hardware stores. Here's my worst problem is finding anybody to work for him that won't steal. Gave one of his men, he gave a prominent part of his responsibility to, and the guy took the credit card for the company and ran up a lot of personal bills on it. A person like that won't take drugs, and they'll work when nobody's watching. If I were in a business, I'd want to hire Christians, especially mature Christians. Romans, how about that, Danny? I wouldn't be surprised if in years you've had people stealing from you. You have? Well, isn't that a shock? All right. Romans 13, verse 8. Owe no man anything but to love one another. For he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. Look at Romans 13 and verse 9. No adultery, no murder, no stealing, no lying, no covetousness, because agape seeks the happiness of others ahead of their own. How are you going to go and steal from someone and show them agape love? How are you going to be coveting something that somebody else has if you love that person the way Christ loved us? The answer is you can't. What's the rewards of a Christian life like that? Happier lives and family, more friends, better jobs, and bigger churches. If that's not sufficient to motivate us, I don't know what to tell you. I only can tell you that's what I live for. Appreciate your being here tonight. I hope that perhaps I've challenged you to search for more in Christianity than just to be a pew packer or someone who has a modicum of success winning souls. But I want to emphasize again, this kind of love is a compulsive love that drives you to help someone who needs help. It's the kind of love that won't let you pass that guy by who's laying there in a ditch having been beaten and left half naked like the priest and the Levite did in the parable of the Good Samaritan. What would happen if we were like that? A lot of good things here on earth and a lot of good things in heaven when we all get together to hymn the praises of our God and King. I didn't say it, but I should have said, what a wonderful sound was coming from you folks prior to my getting up here. Singing tonight was wonderful. It's a foretaste of what we'll hear one day. And the gates open, and we sing the song of redemption together. I hope you're there. I hope, if you haven't already made the decision, that you'll be more determined than ever to do something about the things that this God who gave the Prince of Heaven as a sin offering, to take the punishment for the sins that I committed and you committed in order to motivate us to live for Him and to turn our backs on sin, turn our faces toward heavens, and turn our hearts to serving God. If you're here tonight and if you've never made that decision, what's holding you back? God doesn't ask you to do anything that's expensive or even embarrassing. In fact, it's something that when someone responds to the gospel of Christ, I've been in the church long enough that it brings forth tears on most of us. Tears of joy, because that would prove to Christ once again that his journey to Calvary was worthwhile. If you're like me, the sand in our glasses is getting mighty low. And we're not going to have a lot of time to answer the Lord's invitation. You're not promised another day. But you are promised tonight that you have an opportunity to obey Christ, either by putting him on in baptism, or if you've fallen away from Christ, confessing the fact that you need to do better, seeking the prayers of one of these godly men to pray on your behalf. We'd be happy to do any of those things. All that remains is for you to express that desire. If you have it, come forward as we sing to encourage you.